Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Real Deal Podcast. My name is Ian Phillips. I write about movies. I talk about movies. I watch movies. Just mostly everything movies. I'm here with my co-host, Cassie Grimaldi.
Hi, everybody. I'm Cassie. I watch TV and movies and write about TV and movies, and I really like those things.
And we also have a special guest today. This is our guest host for the day, Mike Rogers, our resident Marvel expert.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? I'm Mike Rogers. I am indeed a Marvel expert, professor of comics, all-around moviegoer, enjoyer, and, you know, all that good stuff.
Mike's going to come in handy later when we talk about our thoughts on Captain America Winter Soldier later in the show. But first we're going to talk about this week's news in TV and film. Our first story is a continuation of a story last week, which I didn't realize would be to be continued. But anyway, after Letterman announced his retirement, this week it was announced that Stephen Colbert would be plucked away from the Colbert Report and replacing Letterman in 2015. I know, are you guys both big fans of Stephen Colbert? I know I grew up with him.
I love Colbert. I've been a big fan of his since, like, forever. I've seen him live and stuff. I bought the wrist strong bracelets. I really like Colbert.
Yeah, I grew up on him. I watch the Colbert Report every day. I go out of my way to watch it. It's, like, part of my daily routine. I liked your verbiage there, plucked away from the Colbert
and that's what it feels like. He's being taken away from one show and moved to another.
Well, he still has another year.
That's true. We still get another year. Him. But anyway, yeah. It's a very weird decision for me because partly I'm very happy because he's going to be getting this really great late night slot, but at the same time, this means he'll be leaving the Colbert Report, which he's done so much to build into an institution from scratch. He said that he's going to be leaving his conservative character behind. So I don't know, like, what that means for this new show. Is he going to be like Dave? Is he going to be more traditional? What do you guys think?
I think he's going to be himself. I was actually looking online at some of his clips of him being interviewed and accepting I think he was kind of in character when he accepted his first Emmy this year? Yeah,
he was like kind of in character.
Yeah, he was kind of in character. But then I saw him accepting some award from like the military, and then I saw him on Oprah's Next Chapter with his wife. And he was like eerily really, really nice, and I like.
He's such a nice guy.
I kept expecting him to come out of nowhere and tell, like, say to Oprah that gay marriage is wrong or something, but be funny about it in a weird, charming way. But he didn't. He was like really nice.
No, yeah. I initially kind of just like assumed that the character would go with him, but that, you know, I guess that doesn't really make any sense. And when he announced that he was going to leave the character behind, I don't know. I definitely have mixed feelings about it because I love the character. I think it's so funny, and. I don't know. I think he's a genuine guy, a sincere guy, and like, I think that he'll be great on the show, and I think it'll just be very different. But I'm most interested to see whether or not he pronounces it Colbert or Colbert.
I think Colbert has been around since even before the Colbert Report, since he was doing stuff on Strangers with Candy, on Saturday Night Live, and all of that. But I think the guy is a comic genius, and maybe he'll create a whole different character.
I think that's most likely.
No,
he's also not only
late night hosts completely themselves.
Yeah, he's not only a comic genius, he's kind of like a regular genius.
Yeah, he's a smart guy, he's a learned guy.
He's a consultant for the Hobbit movies.
He's actually the guy who like hired him for the Hobbit movies was at the show when I was there for the taping.
Oh really?
Yeah, and he like just like he totally like stopped talking to the audience and just like came up to the guy and just like sat and like talked to him for like 5 minutes.
About the Hobbit.
They were just like rattling off things.
He loves like the Lord of the Rings Tolkien universe so much.
He had a cameo in Desolation of Smaug, I think.
Oh, did he really? I didn't know that.
It was like something you had to find online. It was like a blink and you miss it.
That's funny.
Yeah. But also something interesting I want to talk about is his character because, like, it's very much, it's weird because at this point everybody is in on the joke. And it kind of feels like even though, like, he still is in character, like, half the time he's kind of not anymore. And he's very good at breaking it. And whenever he does, it's still great.
Yeah.
And, like, when I first heard about this news, I was, like, very upset. But I've started to warm up to it more and more. Especially we all watched before this Colbert announcing on his show. That he was going to be taking over, and just that look on his face, he looks so happy.
Yeah, he looks really happy.
Yeah, he just, he did.
He might even be tired of being the same character.
I wouldn't be surprised about that, especially like considering how like genuinely nice of a guy he is.
Yeah.
Like he probably doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to do that forever. I'm sure.
Yeah.
He can't be mean forever.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, he's a great guy, so I'm happy for him. I wish him all the best.
Yeah, we'll be watching for these next 8 months, Steven. You better finish covering all those districts. All right, next bit of film news. So I was reading earlier this week that Star Wars has, the new Star Wars directed by J.J. Abrams, Episode 7, which doesn't have a second name yet, has begun filming, which is very interesting because the casting process is not done yet.
Yeah, which is really weird.
Yes, it's not normally something that happens. But it seems like all of the hype around this new Star Wars is over who is going to be cast and the mystery of it.
Yeah. So far we have Adam Driver.
That's also still rumored, even though it's going to be...
Is that still rumored?
I think if you look on IMDb, they show like every actor from the original cast, and then in parentheses it just says rumored.
Ugh.
So they're just like basically like anybody could be in this at this point.
I'm not a big Adam Driver fan, so I kind of hope that I don't know. I'm not a girls fan, and I don't.
He's done so much more. Yeah, than girls.
I mean, I guess so. But he just annoys me so much on girls that
he's the best part of Girls.
Ugh. He is. I agree with you. He's I didn't like him at first, but they like turned him around in the first season and made him the most likable character. He also sings about outer space and Inside Llewyn Davis.
He does sing about outer space. All right, I'll admit that was my favorite
scene in that movie.
Yeah. And he's in Lincoln.
He is in Lincoln.
Oh, yeah, he's
true.
In Lincoln. I forgot about
and
that.
And he's in Francis Ha.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Francis Ha and Girls are basically the same.
He's a decent actor. He's a decent actor. I'm curious to see what he'll do. He's a Sith Lord, right? That's what he's rumored to be cast as?
I think so. Sith Lord from Brooklyn. I'm guessing that's what it's going
to
be.
He wants to spend more time on his carpentry.
He's got to audition for that new... That's what he was auditioning for this whole season of Girls.
Yeah. Star Wars.
But that's anyway, funny. It's also interesting to me how secretive it's been, because it's really hard to, like, make a... Like, nowadays, to make, like, a movie this hyped and not have a million set photos being released before and everyone knowing every little plot detail. The script hasn't been leaked. I was reading an article recently on the website The Dissolve, and they were talking about how, like, that kind of, that, like, now you know everything about a movie before it's even released, and that kind of ruins the mystique. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is making me want to kind of see Star Wars more, because I know this could be really good for all we know.
Yeah. I mean, I think J.J. Abrams messed up when he tried to make Khan a secret for Star Trek, so, you know, he's going to do it right this time.
Yeah, maybe this time he'll do it right. All right, so our last news item of the day, this happened about a week ago when James Franco was caught accidentally hitting on an underage girl on Instagram. Not that this is like the most important story of the week.
No, but it's definitely interesting.
It's definitely interesting. She was 17, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Soon to be 18.
Soon to be 18.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, fine, James, we'll give you...
He decided to apologize to the world on the important show, Kelly and Michael.
That's where public apologies are made nowadays. Yeah. But I was... There was
with
a lot
Kelly
of,
Ripper going, it's okay. She, like, basically said, it happens to the best of us. Like, no, it doesn't, Kelly.
No, it
Ripper
doesn't.
Does not
well, maybe we're just not yet...
To,
we're not maybe we're not the best of us yet, so we don't know.
Exactly. When you're a celebrity, I guess that's the only way he can go and find girls to meet.
You know...
Even though she... No.
Yeah, I totally get that, but it's just like... She told him she was 17.
Yeah,
he was like,
weird.
"How old are you?" And he was like, "She was like 17."
Wait, did
he was
keep
like,
doing it after?
And he was like, "Why don't we hang out at your hotel? Should I buy a room?"
My favorite part was he was like, "Do I get a hotel room?" And he did it in like broken English too. And he was like, "Yes or no?" Like,
I
just like
so
kept
weird.
Sending her texts.
It's like a choose your own adventure story.
This is like a piece. It's probably James Franco performance art. She's probably. Yeah. Like 30 years old, completely normal. There's a lot of people have a theory that this is like, I don't know if I agree with this, but a lot of people think it's viral marketing for his new movie coming out called
Palo Alto,
which is about him being in a relationship with a college student. So a lot of people think this is viral marketing. It's a stupid way.
Yeah, I don't think it is, but I mean, now it is.
I mean, now it is. Like maybe it wasn't, but a bunch of journalists decided to make it that.
Yeah, so good for James Franco, I guess.
He's still James Franco. He's still doing a million projects.
And he didn't actually meet her, which is good, but... It's still kind of weird that he was planning to.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it was very weird.
He has a really weird Instagram in general, and we could probably do another whole segment on the content of his Instagram, but we won't go there.
I would love to do that. One day, that would be a blast.
It's a dream of Ian's.
All right, I think that's our last news story for the week, and we're going to move on to Analog This, where we review this week's TV shows. This past Sunday was a very big day for HBO. With the premiere of one new show, two shows that have already been on for a while. The first one was the premiere of Silicon Valley. It was its first episode ever. This is a new show by Mike Judge. If you don't know who Mike Judge is, he is the brilliant mind behind Office Space, Beavis and Butthead, King of the Hill. His new show takes place in Silicon Valley during the current tech boom there. And it's about a new startup business, and the main guy's played by Thomas Middleditch, who, yes, it's a great name.
It's a really great name.
It's like a tongue twister of a name. And it's about his, I guess, a ragtag team, if you want to call it that, trying to promote their newest app. And we all agreed, I think it had a really strong start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it really did. I really liked that. I don't know anything about technology or apps. I felt like I was kind of, maybe because I had seen The Social Network or something. But
it feels like a comedy version of The Social Network.
Yeah, it's no, really it definitely.
But like with less like Aaron Sorkin walk and talks.
Yeah, it definitely played out like that. I thought it was really fun. Like I wasn't expecting it to be that funny. Because you know I'm not interested in the Silicon Valley like whole movement that much either. But I laughed throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. The opening was really great. Which is always what, you know, I'll turn it off within the first 5 or 6 minutes if it's not funny by then. But it was, and I kept watching it. I'm definitely going to watch it next week.
Really cool opening credits, too. I'll just
yeah.
say that.
Oh, yeah.
It's done by the artist E-Boy. I don't know how
Who's that?
He does.
Name rings a bell.
I think he did a few things for the Lego Movie poster art, but
that's a great movie.
That is a great movie. We should just point that out. But I just really like the way, like you were just saying, like I don't know that much about Silicon Valley or know how much interest I have, but like it made me get interested in it, especially like by the end of the episode. And like you kind of see that this character, whose name is Richard, played by Thomas Middleditch, is like changing. He starts off as very timid, somebody who has no idea how talented he is. And I already have an idea of where the show is going to go. It's going to be about him opening up more and discovering his own talents.
And the battle not to get screwed over by everybody who wants his, like...
Which is a tough
cool
battle.
Yes.
Or whatever. It can do.
An algorithm for... It's a compression algorithm.
It's funny, because the way that they set it up is that, like, he's written this really, like, stupid music matching app.
Yeah.
But inside the app,
copyright.
Yeah, for, like, copyright infringement stuff. And inside the app, this algorithm is hidden that's, like, worth a lot of money. And, I don't know, I thought they did a very good job introducing us into a world that I didn't really know about. And now I feel like I kind of do know enough to watch the show anyway.
Yeah.
I saw a quote from the AV Club where they called this show, like, a tech world entourage, which they said was actually a compliment, weirdly.
Yeah.
But I kind of understand why. The show, I think it's better than Entourage, but it's more about, like, I like how they present it kind of as this world that's, like, Hollywood in a way, and like these people are all stars and they throw giant parties every time somebody invests $2 billion in their app, even if they didn't really do anything.
Yeah, that was really a funny scene. But I also like that it's a nice nerd show alternative to the Big Bang Theory.
Speaking of which, I was just telling Mike this before the show, but apparently Chuck Lorre is sick of writing them. So maybe we won't get any more Big Bang Theory soon.
I'd say we should make a hashtag cancel Big Bang Theory Twitter, but they'll probably just end up getting Letterman's job then.
Probably.
Yeah.
Also on Sunday was the season 3 premiere of Veep. Veep, I assert, is one of the funniest shows on TV. I still don't think it really gets as much credit as it deserves.
I think enough credit.
I don't think it gets that much credit. I think people are really focused on, like, network comedies, and they really people mute your computer.
They're laughing. They're just like us.
There you go.
Anyway, I don't think Veep gets enough credit because I think HBO gets a lot more sort of hype and recognition for its dramas, and a lot of its comedies are really overlooked. Besides Girls and Sex
in
the City,
which isn't even that much of a comedy. Girls,
no, and neither was Sex in the City. But
that's actually a really interesting point, because now that I think about it, a lot of their, like, pure comedies have, like, gone in trouble or gone canceled. Earlier this year, both Hello Ladies and Family Tree got canceled. Bored
Hello
to Death
Ladies
got canceled after
was
three
so
seasons.
Family Tree.
I never
I like
saw
Family
it.
Tree.
I really liked Family Tree. It was only on for one season, and it got canceled, unfortunately.
Yeah.
For all of you Family Tree fans out there. But I thought that this was, Veep was, hit the ground running this season. I think this was a really one of their strongest episodes.
Oh my god, yet. It's so good. It's so funny.
I can't get into Veep. I don't know. I just...
Why not?
I've watched a handful of episodes, and I think it's funny, but it's not funny enough for me to follow.
You know what it is? I think a lot of people... I think the plot on Veep is really slow, and the jokes are really fast, and that's a weird disconnect.
It's it's a very dry sense of humor. The guy who made it is Armando Iannucci, who is actually, like, he's English, and I think he brings a lot of the sensibilities to Veep.
He made a really similar show.
The Thick of It.
And the movie In the Loop.
Which is a lot of, like, those same actors from In the Loop are on Veep now, including Anna Chlumsky. Oh. That's a great movie if you've never seen In the Loop, everyone.
Yeah, it's really good.
I will say that, like, not being a regular who watches, like, regularly watching Veep, this episode was a good, like... Like, I kind of knew what was going on, and I understood all the characters and stuff, so... I can see how, like, people enjoy it and why they think it's a good show. I thought it was... The plot was slow. The jokes are fast, you're right.
It's a very... The jokes... I just love listening to the jokes. I love listening to the way that all the politicians, like, insult each other.
Me too, and it's all it's all said really quickly, and it's almost as if it's under their breath, but it's not. It's just, like...
You can just hear
just
it.
Just, like, these fleeting comments that are too good.
Amazing. I think the best one from this week, so... This season starts with Selina Meyer, who is the vice president, is now preparing to possibly run for president. And she wrote a book whose title I can't remember. But either way, there's a colon in the title. And another politician tells her, "You're so full of shit, it has a colon right in the middle."
That was a really funny joke.
Like, I just want to rewind that and listen to it over and over again. It's brilliant, I think.
Oh, it's...
I was watching with my friend, and I cracked up at that joke, and he just totally missed it. He was like, "Why are you laughing?" Colon joke.
Yes. Literally, like, half... I love all the politics stuff is really interesting, but I think I could also just watch it if it was just every half hour was them yelling at Jonah.
Oh, Jonah's my favorite character. Just because of the ridiculous things he says and the things everyone says to him. My favorite joke from the series was... when Selena asked him if he liked sex and if he liked to travel, and then she said, "But then you could fuck raw off or fuck right off," or something like that. Oh my god, it was so good. So good.
He says something this week about trying to pick up women at a wedding that was, like,
oh my god,
equally hilarious. That was,
that
like
was funny.
So creepy, but just equally
he says
hilarious.
The creepiest things, and they're so, for some reason, they're so funny.
Every time. We also had, I think this is the show maybe we're most excited about, but this was the season 4 premiere of Game of Thrones.
Man, yeah. Was it great.
Now, let me just preface this by saying that, it came on 9:00 on Sunday on HBO Go, and so many people tried to watch it that the entire website crashed.
It was a traumatic experience.
Yes, it was.
It was something I went through personally. And
it had the most viewers since the last episode of The Sopranos.
Yeah, on watching it live, so people are still watching live TV.
Yep.
It's only like 7 million people, but
that's a lot for each. That's a lot for HBO.
Yeah.
Considering the fact that it's a subscriber only network. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what did you guys think of the season premiere?
I
loved it. It was amazing. I mean, I thought the opening was really cool before the credits. We're going to do some spoilers here, I assume.
We're going to have a little bit of spoilers, so if you have not watched the episode of Game of Thrones yet and would like to, then I would say fast forward until we talk about Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Which will also be full of spoilers.
Yes. This is spoiler territory, people. So.
Yeah, I thought the episode was really good. The opening was awesome. Jaime Lannister's new hand was really awesome. You know, it was a little bit slow at some points, but... I was just so excited for it to be back that I was, you know, enjoying it the whole time. The part where the guy says to Tyrion that the Lannisters aren't the only ones to pay their debts was my favorite line.
Yeah.
Well, until the end of the episode, which was amazing. But,
what a great ending.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, I've just noticed that every time there's a season premiere for Game of Thrones, that there's always so much they have to do by, like, because there's so many different characters and so many different storylines, so they have to start off every season by both catching us up with everybody else and introducing new characters.
I think
the first episode will be slow.
They have very clever ways of doing
that,
I think. Yeah, this came sort of near the end, but when Arya and the Hound were they went to the bar that they went to, or what, the tavern or whatever, the Hound was like, Arya was like, oh, that guy killed my friend, but she said his name, I can't remember his name, it's like Fluffy or some Figgy or Piggy or something.
Sounds like something George R. R. Martin
yeah,
would write.
Something, yeah, and so the Hound was like, what's a Piggy or something like that. And I just thought that was so clever, like, because who's going to remember
that? We don't remember that.
No. And they do a lot of that kind of thing. Yeah. And I always thought the Hound was someone who sort of represented the audience and like sort of like mm-hmm. went back and forth with these very moral things.
Yeah. I used to really like Danny, but Arya and the Hound are becoming my like favorite part of the show now.
Yes, they really are. That last scene proved it. Dan Harmon on Twitter, he called it, if you've ever seen the movie The Professional, he said it was like watching The Professional but less creepy, which is pretty accurate. I just love the two of them together. Like, they seem like at times they're very opposing forces, but they always work so well together. Now we know they can fight and kill other people together really well.
And really, really cool.
Yes, in really cool
ways.
Really
great.
But also we saw, I don't like the other characters were back, we saw a lot of Daenerys' episodes. This episode was a lot about the Lannisters.
Yeah, it was mostly about the Lannisters. What were you going to say?
Someone in our class yesterday told us about how the series is supposed to start off with you rooting for Ned Stark, but it's really more, I think it's real at its core, it's like sort of really about Jaime Lannister.
Yeah, I think so too.
Interesting.
I really enjoyed the fact that Jaime comes back. And his sister no longer is interested in having a relationship with him.
He's totally in love with Brienne, though.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
It's gotta happen.
No, he is.
They're recasting her, right?
They're recasting her as someone in Game of Thrones, The Hunger Games.
She's leaving the show, is that right?
No.
I thought she was leaving,
which made me panic, because I don't know if that meant something would happen to her character, or...
I hope she's not leaving the show. I heard that she had some kind of time commitment in Game of Thrones. They were going to recast her. But that could have just been speculation. Why don't you guys go Google that?
She'll be in the new Hunger Games movie.
Yeah, you can all
regardless of whether she's on Game of Thrones anymore.
Yeah.
Good for her, she'll be getting movie roles,
that's
too.
Good.
She's actually really beautiful in real life, so...
And did you wanted to say something? We were talking about Sansa.
Yes,
I mean,
okay.
You wanted to talk about that.
So this episode was, everyone was like, oh, Arya's so badass, and she's so cool,
and it was true.
Yeah, she's really badass, but so a lot of the satisfaction, everybody thinks an episode of Game of Thrones is really good when a major character kills someone, I think. That's like a lot of the criteria for people saying this episode was good and exciting.
Those are the episodes that always get the most hype.
But for me, the best part of this episode was when Tywin Lannister told Jaime Lannister that he didn't have a family anymore, and it was like, oh my god.
I felt bad for him. It's crazy that we feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Like,
for Jaime.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts. Like, first episode of the series, he's having sex with his sister and throws a kid out of a building,
and then
now
you like him.
Now we're sitting here talking about how bad
he's
we
lost his hand.
Brienne from the Bear.
Yes, he did do that.
Yeah.
He lost his hand.
I thought that bear was the
him.
Weirdest thing.
That was a really cool episode.
So bizarre.
that was very bizarre.
So anyway, Sansa Stark. Back to our okay. So there's like a lot of people on the internet and like on Tumblr and Reddit who hate Sansa because she represents
total bitch.
Okay.
That's what people say.
This is what people say. Because she sort of represents someone who sort of grew up reading the fantasy genre and like wanting to be saved by a knight, and that she was sort of like raised liking pretty dresses and wanting to be a princess. And people think that she's such a bitch and she's so annoying, but she's not.
I feel bad for her. That's interesting that you say about how she always wanted to grow up being a princess, and she's living the life now.
And she hates it.
She
and the fact that she has to use her training as someone who's always wanted to be like a noble woman just to survive in King's Landing, so Joffrey doesn't rape and kill her, is really amazing. And she's like such a strong character. And just because there's a very narrow archetype of what it is to be a strong female character, and Sansa doesn't really fit in that category, And so I think that's something that people need to consider because she's really strong.
I'll consider it.
And smart.
I honestly didn't know about a lot of this until this week. It somehow completely escaped me. Luckily, I avoided the worst part of the internet, but it makes me think of what people would always say about Skyler on Breaking Bad.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
And they say a lot of that about Betty Draper on Mad Men, although she's not my favorite character on Mad Men.
But, like, those women were supposed to create tension, and Sansa isn't there to create tension.
She's a victim.
No, she's totally a victim.
Yeah.
Poor Sansa.
Everything,
I'm glad I've convinced you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she used to be a bitch, but now I feel bad for her.
It was, like, cute little sibling rivalry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it was that whole setup to her really having to come to terms with what she really wanted out of life and, like, how she always thought her little sister was terrible because she was annoying, but she had no idea what the world was really like outside of Winterfell.
She's everything Joffrey touches just dies inside. He's horrible.
He's the worst.
I think the moral of the story here is that Thrones just does a really good job of taking people that we hate and then making us feel really bad for them.
That's the quality of all the best of every show I like, is making you both like and hate a person on any given episode.
Mm-hmm.
You can, like, the fact that it can make, like, a murderer, like, suddenly somebody you sympathize for, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
All right. Okay, I think we're going to take a little break. And then when we come back, we are going to talk about the Winter Soldier. So stay tuned, everybody. Welcome back, everybody. And now it's time for Real Talk, where we review a movie that's come out this week. This week, we are going to talk about Captain America, Winter Soldier. Before we begin, I'd like to turn this over a second to Mike Rogers. Mike, can you just explain why you're here talking about Captain America? What makes you so qualified for this job?
Sure. Well, you know, I've been reading comics since I was, I don't know, how old do you start reading? What, like age 5? I don't know.
Something like that.
Well, Cassie was gifted, but I wasn't as gifted as Cassie. So I started reading comics like Spidey Super Stories and stuff when I was 5, and I've been absolutely obsessed with comics and the Marvel Universe since then. And to the point where I've even taught a class on comic book movies where I explored how comics translate into film. We talked about a lot about the Avengers. We talked about, not even just superhero movies, but other graphic novels that translated into film. So I'm technically like a professor of comics, which is kind of cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. So coming to this was the second superhero movie that I've seen after teaching this class. So I looked at it both as like,
what was the first one?
I saw Thor: The Dark World.
Okay.
Actually took the class on a field trip there. That's awesome. Was a lot of fun. But yeah, so I was looking at it as a fan and as a movie critic. But mostly as a fan, because this movie was just absolutely so amazing that I like stopped critiquing it because I could find very few things that I wanted to critique.
And now, are you a big fan of Captain America, and have you read a lot of the Captain America comics?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Captain America is a great character, and you know, he has the same last name as me, which is pretty
Steve
pretty,
Rogers.
As a kid, that's a big deal. Like, I could be Captain America because he's related to me. Maybe.
How do you think I feel about Captain Phillips?
I understand. I'm the captain now.
I am captain now. All right, we'll get back on track. It's interesting how you say that you approach this from a fan. I've read one of the Captain America comic books. I believe it was the Winter Soldier one. It was written by Ed Brubaker, which I only read that one. I loved it. But I was always, when I go into Marvel movies, besides Spider-Man, which I've actually read a lot of the comics of, I usually go in looking at it as somebody who watches movies, so I always have a kind of different tilt. And as a movie fan, as a blockbuster, I enjoyed it. There's some great action. Eventually, they raise the stakes really high, but I had some problems with it that I don't know how you feel, but it kind of pertains with some of my problems about a lot of the Marvel movies.
Right.
Because they're trying to do a lot, basically, by making, like, the Avengers and Captain America, and, like, even some stuff from the TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., all one thing.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Which, you know, I actually read this week's episode. There's some people talking about it. Apparently, it's starting to get a lot better. I've never watched it.
Well,
once.
I actually think, you know, a little spoiler alert for the movie. You know, I just think the ending of the film is going to change the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show a lot. because of the nature of what happens with S.H.I.E.L.D. in the movie. Mm-hmm. It's just going to make the show have a completely different flavor. And I think it'll raise the stakes for the show,
but too. But doesn't the show take place kind of in a different... You were going to tell me something like a different reality.
Yeah,
different,
so...
It's really bizarre.
It's a strange thing. So, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. is this big organization that's kind of like the superhero FBI in all the Marvel movies. And the show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., while everyone thought it would be about S.H.I.E.L.D., is actually about this secret division of S.H.I.E.L.D. that isn't technically affiliated because they technically don't exist. So you've got Agent Coulson, who's from the Avengers movie, who seemingly dies.
In the Avengers.
Well, he does die, but then they bring him back on the show in a very strange way. He drinks some kind of like weird potion or something like that. Like it was very bizarre.
The studios, like, they could be really good, but their production quality compared to the Marvel Universe movies of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is exponentially so much worse. Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm so excited about the Netflix pilots that Marvel's going to be putting out. Yeah. I mean, ABC Studios is producing them, but it's going to be on Netflix, and that means they're going to have a lot more free reign, I think.
Yeah. Also, speaking of production value, I just want to say this movie looked so awesome.
Oh,
I thought
absolutely.
I didn't see it in IMAX 3D, which I know you did.
I did.
And during like one of the first chase scenes, like I know I'm talking about with Nick Fury, I immediately regretted not shelling out the extra money to see it in IMAX 3D.
Yeah,
scene is really, really great and different.
Yeah, there's a lot I think in this movie that's different than what you would expect, especially seeing the first Captain America movie. I guess you guys have seen it.
I actually just saw it for the first time.
I'll say that it's more than mediocre, but it's definitely not the best Marvel film that's out there. I think it's a little bit silly, and it's a little more like classic like superhero movie, where this one really plays like a political thriller, and they really like hyped it up for an adult audience rather than just like, you know, like a kid's
watch. I think where that comes into play is it really establishes I think the first movie really establishes Captain America and Steve Rogers' conflict with the political sort of espionage aspect in the second movie. So I think that was kind of important, even though if it comes off as like cornier in the first movie. Yeah. Like, the first movie was really corny.
But I think the first movie, what I liked about it is that reminded me of like kind of like a corny old World War II movie.
Yeah,
it had
Hugo Weaving as like a glowing red.
I love Hugo Weaving, I think he's great. As every villain, I think Hugo Weaving is great. It reminded me of
hyperbolic good versus evil.
Yeah, it was. I have the biggest problem with the ending that I know.
Well, the first Captain America. Yeah, but that's also that issue where I think we can kind of talk about at this point. It's been so many years. You haven't seen the first Captain America, but it ends with him ending up in the future, and Nick Fury is waiting for him there in the middle of modern day Times
Square.
Which
I love that part. I think that
part's
really cool.
You like that part? What part didn't you like?
I didn't like how he crashes into the ice and freezes, because he's flying this plane into the ice, right? And it's just like, you have so many, you're Captain America, the super soldier. You have so many options besides staying in the plane while it crashes into the ice. Like, isn't there some kind of an autopilot, or can't you just like aim it towards the water? Yeah, but, like, you could have just, like, aimed it towards the water, like, stuck a boot to, like, keep the controls in lock.
You had to get into the Avengers somehow.
Yeah. I guess so.
That's funny you bring up autopilots. There was, like, a big, like, debate at the end of The Dark Knight Rises,
too. Yeah, I know.
So, like, did Superman also save Captain America? Is that the thing?
I don't know, maybe.
This Marvel-DC crossover probably happened
in one day. In the comics, the way that it turns out is he's on this rocket that, like, has a bomb, and the reason he can't jump off the rocket...
You're talking about Batman, or...?
No, I'm talking about Captain America. The reason he can't jump off the rocket is because he's got to keep the wires, like... from like being together, so the bomb doesn't go off.
So they didn't have that really in the first movie.
Yeah, they, you know, if he's, I just felt like if he's driving a plane, he probably could have like figured out a way to get out of it first.
Did the Winter Soldier, was it faithful towards the comics, or was there a lot of it that was based off a certain comic?
The Winter Soldier is like introduced in Brubaker's run, which I know you read some of.
I read a little bit, yes.
Brubaker's run is absolutely terrific. If anyone liked this movie or is at all interested in Captain America, I highly suggest reading at Brubaker's run on Cap. But it's partly inspired by Winter Soldier. That's where the whole villain storyline comes in. And a lot of the character development of Captain America is more inspired by, like, the more recent Cap books.
they did a whole storyline called, like, Death of Captain America, and then eventually he comes back, and once he comes back, a lot of that stuff, like, even the costume was inspired by, he for a while, he's, like, in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comics, mm-hmm. and he wears that, like, that uniform that he's walking around in when he's not in full costume. So it's a lot based on, like, the fact that, like, Cap, like, questioning S.H.I.E.L.D. and questioning, like, what the organization stands for and whether or not it's right. It's, like, a big theme that's been playing in the comics for the last few years.
So this was, I feel like the first movie, in a way, was, like, kind of based off old school Captain America, and this one is supposed to be a more modern Captain America, if that's what you're saying.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, the first movie is all, pretty much all based on, like, World War II Cap, yes. which was, you know, in the 40s, he was created as a character yeah. just to, like,
to help
boost patriotism. Yeah.
Which is what the movie is also about. Yeah. That's something that was interesting. The first movie is a little meta like that because it's about
yeah.
him being
and then,
used to boost patriotism.
And then,
patriotism.
You know, once yeah. the war was over, they kind of just let the character, like, fizzle away. And it was Stan Lee's idea to bring him back in the 60s and make him part of the Avengers. And that's why, I mean, originally he was never, like, lost in the ice or anything like that. They just kind of stopped writing Cap comics.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 60s, Stan Lee came up with the idea that he was frozen in time and that the Avengers would find him and thaw him out and he would be the Man Out of Time, which is a really, really brilliant way to bring him back, I think.
But that's really interesting what you're saying about him being a member of S.H.I.E.L.D., mostly wearing the S.H.I.E.L.D. uniform, because
yeah.
something I didn't like when I watched this movie was I thought that it didn't feel like a Captain America movie for a lot of it. I think what you're bringing up now is interesting. It's making me rethink how I feel about it, but, like, I felt like it didn't become really a movie about Captain America until the second half. The first half felt like a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie.
Yeah, well, I think that was definitely a decision on Marvel's part because, you know, people have been clamoring for a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie for a long time, and I think that I don't think a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie would ever really be super viable, but when you put it in Captain America, when you pair it up with Captain America, it's awesome because
yes.
you can put that
yeah.
stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the way that Captain America is going in the comics right now, I think it does fit the character because they're really pushing this whole Cap questioning what America's standing for now as because he, you know, he's a man from the 40s who still has these 40s ideals,
yes.
but he's trying to figure out what's going on with the country now and if the country that he's fighting for now is really the same thing that he was fighting for in the 40s.
I think they did that in really a sophisticated way more than just, like, juxtaposing him with that. Linda Holmes, who works for NPR, had this really great theory about it, about how the S.H.I.E.L.D. building has to be in Virginia because of the
mm-hmm.
building codes in Washington, D.C., which is really smart.
That is very smart.
And so Captain America is more associated with, like, pastoral Washington, like, the neoclassical buildings and, like, the greenery and all of that, while is natural, is very, like, manicured. So there's, like, something sort of, like, performative about it. So I thought that was really interesting. And every
yeah.
time Captain America has, like, a very emotional moment in this movie, he's very surrounded by, like, nature and greenery and how he's sort of, like, very attached to sort of the, I guess you could almost say, like, the founding ideals of our country or, like, the new Washington,
like,
back in the 19th century.
He's still, that's, like, a very, like, there's a big leap between now and the 40s, like,
yeah.
whatever, when they're, I guess, like, patriotism is a very different thing now. I've also read a lot that this movie is, like, based on or can be seen as, like, based on the NSA.
Yeah, which I guess
yeah.
it was actually written before.
It was written before, but I guess it ended up predicting it, like, in a very smart way.
It's pretty cool. I think movies do that a lot, actually. I mean, but
yeah.
it's always cool when it works out nicely like that.
No, it definitely is. But either way, this is also, remember, a big summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
And at that, it's a lot of fun. It's directed also, just want to say, by Anthony and Joe Russo.
Yeah,
they actually, in terms of movies, the one I can think of on the top of my head is Yumi and Dupree. But what I know them,
Believe me, this is not like that.
No, but yes, this is not like that at all. Owen Wilson does not end up living with Captain America. But what I know them best for is for directing episodes of Arrested Development and Community. I'm pretty sure they even directed the very first paintball episode of Community.
Oh, that's cool.
Which, in a way, which is like, that was the episode that made Community what it is today. And that episode is, like, it's like, very, like, sincere to its action influences, but also, like, very funny. And I think they brought a little bit of that to Captain America.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it was good because they did there was a really good balance of action and comedy, which isn't really present in some of the other Marvel movies. Like,
yes.
If you saw Thor: The Dark World, it's a good plot, but there's a lot of like slapstick, like just like kind of dumb jokes in it almost, which I think the S.H.I.E.L.D. show has like a little bit of that corniness too. And I remember when I remember when I saw Thor, I was with a friend and he was saying that, like, you know, he kind of felt like the S.H.I.E.L.D. show was really influencing that movie and the style of it was influencing that. Whereas Captain America the Winter Soldier totally wasn't influenced by that at all. You know, I didn't even feel like the S.H.I.E.L.D. show was a part of this at all, even though S.H.I.E.L.D. was such a big part of the movie.
I've never seen the show. I know very little about the S.H.I.E.L.D. show. It's just what I've heard, and S.H.I.E.L.D. was such a big part of it, so I assumed it was.
The thing about the comedy in this movie is that in the first movie, they used a lot of Steve Rogers' stupidity and sort of, like, good guy-ness as sort of corny comedy. And so in this one, none of the funny moments can come from him.
He's changed a lot. He's more...
He's really... Like, he's woken up in this new world.
So they did it in a smarter way, I think, even being able to not use the main character for comedy.
Which I think is good. I don't necessarily...
A lot of movies don't use the main characters for comedy, which
is... right. They usually have, like, they'll have, like, a sidekick, comic relief.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, going back to Thor again, like, they really kept using Thor as, like, Thor is so, like, different
fish
from
out of
Earth.
Water.
Yeah, so let's laugh at him.
I want another cup of coffee.
Which, you know, is good, but only to a point. Yeah. I don't know, this movie just felt like, it felt like Marvel, like, had this really cool, like, teenager and made all these movies, and then the teenager grew up and made Captain America the Winter Soldier.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, the cast is great too. Anthony Mackie is
Falcon.
Robert Redford. Samuel Jackson.
Samuel Jackson. I feel like a lot of times he'll just show up in a movie and probably get paid like $5 million for saying three lines, like in the horrible RoboCop. When you give him a substantial part, he's always great to watch.
You know, and he really, this is the most substantial like Marvel role that he's had so far. Probably was this film. He's a big part of it, and
yes,
he's an awesome part of it. I mean, the Nick Fury scenes in this movie are my favorite parts of parts of the film.
He talks a lot about how he doesn't trust people. I just noticed he brings that up a lot. If only he trusted people, he'd still have.
It's
that
very
eye.
Cool. The scene with Nick and the scene with Nick says. and Steve in the apartment where he's playing the records and he's got like secret messages on his phone. Very cool.
There's like a scene in if either of you seen All the President's Men.
Yeah.
There's a scene exactly like that where they're in their room and they're playing loud music, and it's either Robert Redford's in that, which is really funny that we bring that up, but one of them starts writing on a typewriter, like, I think this room is bugged, like, just, like, don't say anything. So, like, that's kind of where the whole political thriller thing came in, so that was really cool.
Yeah, I really liked it. You know, because Captain America's not really the kind of superhero that's going to, like, fly into the sky and fight giant monsters, you know, he's not, like, even in the Avengers, he seems a little bit out of place when they're fighting all the, like, giant alien robot things. But this movie, he's fighting people.
That's true.
That don't have powers, that have guns, and have really sinister plots and ideas. And he's fighting smart people rather than big, like, tough people. You know, he's not going up against the Hulk. He's going up against
Nazis.
Arnim Zola and, you know, Hydra and Nazis.
Nazis are still...
The fact that the Nazis are still
involved in this.
Still screwing around with everyone is just great.
They just
darn Nazis.
Those Nazis, they will not go away.
You can't get rid of them.
You can't.
First Amendment, man.
All right, do you guys have any other thoughts on
There's
Winter
that
Soldier?
There's that one pretty cool Easter egg, but I don't want to spoil.
I think I know what you're talking about. Is that to do with Pulp Fiction?
Yeah.
All right, we won't spoil it.
We won't spoil it, but there's a cool Pulp Fiction Easter egg.
It's really funny.
Isn't that there's two at the end, though, right?
There's two. There's two closing credits.
Yeah, there are two closing credits.
The second one was dumb.
No, I like the second one almost better than the first one, honestly. But the Easter egg's not in the closing credits, but it's a good Easter egg, so look out for it.
Yes, look out for it. It's towards the end. So, that was a good talk on Winter Soldier, guys.
Yeah.
We're going to take one more quick break, and then we'll be right back with a few more thoughts. We'll be right back. back, everybody. As always, before we go, we'd like to take a chance to let all of our listeners participate in the show. So we have a little question of the week. So now that Stephen Colbert is going to The Late Show, we want to know, what will Comedy Central do with that half-hour slot? Who could replace him? What kind of show could they put there? Cassie and Mike, how would you answer that question?
I think that they could and should replace them with someone like Samantha Bee from The Daily Show or Kristen Schaal, because I think those two ladies, A, are ladies, and late night needs a lot more of that, and B, I think they both really take on sort of that satirical role really, really, really well, so I think we're missing that Colbert character, and their satire could really add to.
Yeah, I agree with the Samantha Bee idea. I think that would be a really good show. I mean, obviously, John Oliver would have been the choice if he wasn't getting a show on HBO.
Oh, he's going to do so well on that show.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot more highly paid, too.
Probably. It's okay, just a little technical difficulty, everybody.
I think Samantha, I heard someone say Tina Fey, which I don't know where
she
that
has
came
like
from,
three other shows in development right now. She's working on another book. Yeah. People always say, like, every time there's a late night slot open, to give it to Amy Poehler. That would be fine.
Good.
I would say I agree with the Samantha Bee choice. She's been on The Daily Show for probably over a decade now. I would love if it was a show hosted by her and Jason Jones.
Her husband.
By her and her husband. Cool. Canadian Americans having their own show, that'd be great. But also, if they can't figure out who to put there, I say they take that half hour slot and siphon it over to Broad City and just give them an extra hour every week, or just let them do, or do Broad City Live. I don't know. Just more Broad City, the better. By the way,
likes Broad City.
Broad City's great.
Maybe they won't even do a talk show. Maybe they do like a, speaking of Broad City, maybe like an improv, like Who's the Line type of thing.
That'd be really cool. That's a great idea.
They don't have any of that on Comedy Central.
And they also need more. Comedy Central, I think, could use more scripted shows like Review or Broad City or
Bring Back Futurama. That would be awesome. Just saying.
They've already ended Futurama like three times. They can't give it another finale. By the way, I love talking about this late night stuff. I don't fill out March Madness bracket, so every time somebody leaves a late night show, I feel like I'm participating in something like that.
That's definitely more fun than the March Madness
stuff. I agree 100%.
We don't like sports.
Yeah, this is a controversial opinion. Yeah. The fact that we go to Syracuse.
We don't care who knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, if you want to participate, if you think you know somebody who could fill Colbert's slot, then send an email to Ian, IAN, at realdealblog.com. That's real with two E's, and then the rest of the words spelled the way a normal human would normally spell them.
Maybe Ian will get the late night spot.
Yeah, who knows? Okay. Maybe someone will pick up the Real Deal podcast.
Real Deal Live from New York. Captain Fellow.
I am Captain now.
Oh my God.
Then also, well, before we get too off topic, we still have the two questions from the past 2 weeks, which you can still answer. One of them being, what directors would you like to see direct a reboot of a Disney classic? And the other one we have is,
Who's your favorite actor-director?
Yes, who are your favorite actor-directors? Mike, since we have a guest here, how would you answer those two?
All right, well, favorite actor-director is easy for me. It's Ben Affleck. I've loved Ben Affleck since Daredevil, which is saying a lot, because Daredevil's a terrible movie.
Yes.
But I thought he was great in it when I watched it as a kid, and now I still think he's awesome. And, you know, Argo is amazing. It won Best Picture for a good reason. And pretty much anytime you've got Ben Affleck attached to something, especially directing, I'm there. I'm gonna
How do you
it.
Feel about Ben Affleck?
Ben Affleck. I'm obviously gonna go see Superman Batman. I'm worried though, because Superman Batman's coming out the same day as Captain America 3.
I have to
make a choice about which one I go to see at midnight.
Double feature?
My
7 o'clock the night.
Yeah, my friend Ryan,
you saw Captain America on Thursday.
I did.
I saw it
at 8 p.m. So I'm hoping they do that again for Cap 3, because I'll see Cap 3 at 8 and then go right to Superman Batman at midnight.
That's a great idea.
Pack snacks.
Yeah, lots of snacks.
And how would you answer the Disney one?
For the Disney one, I would love to see like Quentin Tarantino doing something, or Robert Rodriguez. Imagine Robert Rodriguez doing 101 Dalmatians.
Guy Ritchie for 101
Dalmatians. I can see Guy Ritchie doing
it, too. He does know those actors.
But I would just love to see, like, a hardcore... Because like, they're trying to make all these, like, hardcore Disney reboots, like the Maleficent movie.
Maleficent even a Disney character?
Yeah, yes, she's from Sleeping Beauty. She turned into a dragon.
I'm an idiot, everybody.
She starts off as a fairy, apparently.
Yeah.
With eagle wings.
But then she becomes a dragon later, I think.
Snow White and the Huntsman.
I don't know. I would just really like to see, like, a really good, like, Disney reboot. Snow White and the Huntsman was best.
just a reminder, the reason we... Yeah, better than Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. Remember the reason. Yeah, that was not good.
I really was not a fan of that.
But anyway, just remember the reason that we first asked that question was because we found that Sofia Coppola is going to be directing a new version of The Little Mermaid, which may be based more on the original book, but either way, that's going to be really interesting.
The original book is messed up.
I've heard. Yeah, it's dark.
They like cut out her tongue and stuff. Yeah. Like, it's really messed up.
There's a lot of rumors going around that Emma Watson might be the Little Mermaid, and people keep like making all these graphics of her, but she would not be right for the role.
No, I don't think she would either.
Who do you?
I think Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning?
Yeah. Who was in Somewhere, which was a Sofia.
I'd love to see a Peter Pan horror movie. That would be cool. You know, in the original Peter Pan.
Once Upon a Time, the TV show.
Right, well, better than that. Hook. Did you know in the original Peter Pan, he has all the Lost Boys, and whenever they get too old, he just slits their throat.
That's what happened on Once Upon a Time.
No, really? I did not know that.
No, well, that happens in the original Peter Pan.
It's amazing how many Disney classics are so dark.
I watched Once Upon a Time, but I stopped.
Thank you.
I have dignity now.
Let's clap for reality.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
All right. Okay, everybody. This is our show for the week. Before we go, you can find my writing at realdealblog.com. Once again, that's R-E-E-L. The rest of it's spelled regularly. Cassie and Mike, where can we find any more of your work or any more of your writing? Anything you'd like to...
You can follow me on Twitter at Cassie Grimaldi, C-A-S-S-I-E. And you can read my column that comes out every Tuesday at The Daily Orange Opinions. My column's called Living Vicariously Through You, and it's about pop culture.
That's right, and you can follow me on Twitter as well at MixmasterMike91. That's like Mixmaster Mike, the BC Boys DJ. And you can also check out my work at youtube.com/humorwhore. That's the comedy group that Cassie and I are both head writers for. So check that out. It's a lot of fun.
Join us next week where you will actually be able to find our podcast on iTunes. And we might have a very special surprise guest for you all. We'll let you know about that. But
it's always a special podcast.
It's true. Well, it's always special.
Let's not undersell ourselves.
Thanks for listening. And as always, keep it real.
Keep it real.